It is time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger. Marshall's the editor and publisher of The Timberjay. It's a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Thanks for being with us, Marshall.
Happy to be here, Heidi.
Well, let's take a look at a story that is in The Timberjay this week about differing perspectives on information that came out on sulfates, because there's a lot of different feelings about this, right?
Right. And this is the so-called wild rice standard, which has actually been in effect in Minnesota since 1973. Fairly strict. In fact, it's the strictest sulfate standard in the country, of just 10 milligrams per liter of discharge into any water of the state that is used for the production of wild rice. That's kind of the way it reads in state rule. But the rule has come under some fire from the mining industry and others up on the Iron Range. And as a result of that, the Pollution Control Agency did some additional research and decided that they were going to refine the sulfate standard. And actually, they've now proposed, in draft form, they've proposed a new standard, that, which is a flexible standard. And it would actually be determined that the standard for any particular discharger would be determined based on some tests that MPC would have to do on downstream sediments, iron content in the water. I mean, it's fairly complicated, but they're saying that this new flexible standard in some cases could be stricter than the existing standard, and in other cases might be significantly less strict. It just depends on the downstream water chemistry and sediment chemistry. So this is what they're proposing. What's interesting is how completely at odds people are in terms of their perspectives on this. I described it as kind of a Rorschach test. This new rule looks very different depending on who's looking at it and talking about it. I mean, just to give you an example, I talked to Steve Georgi. He's the executive director of the Range Association of Municipalities and Schools, and he's just almost freaked out by this new proposal. He believes that this would really push many small cities on the Iron Range into bankruptcy. And he's claiming that because right now most, although we don't know this for sure because they haven't really tested most wastewater treatment facilities up here for sulfate levels, but most of them are probably a little bit above the current standard anyway, so presumably they might be above what they could discharge under this new standard. And the only way to treat for it is through process of reverse osmosis, which is very expensive. And so Georgie's concern is that a lot of these wastewater treatment plants will, the cost of treating for sulfates will be so high that they won't be able to afford it. Now, the MPCA's view on this, of course, is different. They say, well, in fact, because the cost of treating sulfates is likely to be high, that almost every wastewater treatment facility in the region, if not the state, that this actually might apply to, will likely be able to apply and receive a variance. And that is allowed under federal law, under the Clean Water Act. The point is to clean up pollution, not to put cities into bankruptcy or to put businesses into bankruptcy. So in cases where it can be shown that the cost of meeting a standard would be, you know, prohibitive to a city or a business, then the MPCA then can award a variance. According to the MPCA, I talked to Shannon Lothammer, who works in this area with the MPCA, and she said that, in most cases, virtually every wastewater treatment plant up here is going to qualify for a variance, which will mean that they essentially won't have to meet this new standard. Now, that might provide some relief to somebody like Georgie, but to others who are actually, very concerned about the protection of wild rice, this kind of explanation is discouraging, to say the least. I talked to Nancy Schult. She's the water program director for the Fond du Lac Band, and she's done a lot of work and research on wild rice, and she's very concerned about this new proposal. And she doesn't believe that in the end it's going to be, that the MPCA is going to be able to enforce it on the mining industry. That's always been a struggle, as we've talked about before, because, the mining industry does have a tremendous amount of political clout in Minnesota, and that does make it hard for the agency to enforce any kind of standards in any meaningful way. So that's probably going to be an issue. She's also very concerned because this new standard is so complicated in terms of enforcing it and even setting a standard, because it depends on its downstream chemistry and sediment content. The concern they have, I mean, certainly that Nancy Schultz has, is that, you know, the mining industry in particular, they'll have their own scientists. They'll go out and they'll do their own calculations, and they're likely to differ from whatever the MPCA finds. And so there'll be ongoing disputes over that, which will almost certainly end up in the courts. And then, of course, it'll just get dragged out for years. And then, of course, even if there was a standard that wasn't, you know, that the MPCA set, there would still be a schedule of compliance. And, of course, this has been an issue we've seen with the mining industry for years, is the MPCA puts up schedules of compliance, and they just keep getting pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. So I think the feeling is on the other side, while one side sees this as a catastrophe, this new standard that's going to bankrupt everybody, the other side sees this as basically a continuation of non-action or more inaction on the part of the MPCA. So in the meantime, I guess people can weigh in on this new proposal that the MPCA has put out. It is open for public comment right now, and people could go to the MPCA's website if they wanted to get some more information on how to take part in that comment period. And once the comment period is done, then they would take a look at all the comments and respond to them, and then they would issue a final rule most likely next summer. And then that would still have to be approved by the Environmental Protection Agency to actually take effect.
Marshall, what's the effect of sulfates on wild rice? What could happen?
Well, the interesting thing is, sulfate itself does not appear to be harmful to wild rice. The problem is that when you have a large amount of sulfates in the water, it's converted to sulfide in the sediments, and the sulfide is quite toxic to wild rice. And that's the issue here, and that's one of the reasons that the MPCA, you know, does this testing of the downstream sediments, because by understanding that, they can determine how much conversion of sulfates to sulfides is likely in the downstream water.
Marshall, let's move on to another story covered in the Timberjay this week about a planned timber harvest by the DNR north of Burnside Lake. There's been some opposition to this. Tell us about what is there and what the opposition is.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of a fairly common story, I guess, in a way, although, you know, controversies over timber sales have been pretty limited in recent years, in part because, you know, the timber harvest levels have been down. So there haven't been as many of those conflicts that we've seen, you know, over the years. But this latest proposal by the Tower Area DNR to do a thinning of about 101 acres, they originally looked at about 101 acres of pine for possible thinning. They've since reduced that to about 62 acres, which they plan to thin. And they figure the sale will yield about 500 cords of pine bolts and saw logs. And the proposal, however, has generated a lot of opposition by people along the north arm of Burnside Lake. This area in particular has two YMCA camps, Camp DeNord and Camp Widgewagon. And they get a lot of folks up there. And they use a network of trails, you know, right near the two camps. And it happens to be kind of, they go right through the heart of this area that the DNR is proposing for logging. And the area in question it's very nice. I've skied there many times. They have a really nice cross-country ski trail network as well as hiking trails. So it's a really nice area, a lot of pine in there. You know, the DNR says they need to go in there and thin it to help promote some regeneration. You know, others that we talk to who are opposed to this say, well, the regeneration's coming fine, and you know, we think that this is going to be a big disturbance in this area, and it's going to detract from, you know, the quality of the experience for people who go in there on these trails. And they do get, like I said, they do get a lot of use, so, you know, it's clearly an issue. But the DNR notes that some parts of that trail system have been thinned in the past, which is true, although the DNR maintains that the area that's been thinned is regenerating nicely and is very scenic. Other people disagree with that. So, again, it sort of depends on your perspective on all this. But the one thing the DNR did do is they say they're going to proceed with this with input from a group of stakeholders, which will include folks from the North Arm area there, and including at least one of those Y camps. So hopefully as they sit down and start actually designing this thinning in detail, they'll be able to hopefully mitigate some of the main concerns that people have. But that remains to be seen.
All right. Marshall, before we go, I want to get your perspective on the Kruger Challenge. What did you think of it?
Well, all I can say is I'm glad I didn't have to do it. This was a marathon canoe event, very exclusive. There were only a handful of people who actually took part in this thing, and I think when people understand what actually they had to do, they will understand why very few people wanted to do it. It involved it was a race from International Falls to Grand Portage, which is a distance of about 260 miles, and this is by canoe. So it's a long-distance trek, and the goal was to get there as quickly as you possibly could. And they had only three participants who went the full distance. And a fellow from Stacy, who goes by, his name is Robert Volhaber, though he goes by the nickname Beav. And he actually set a new record here at like 91 hours that it took him to get from International Falls to Grand Portage. It's a distance of 260 miles. It includes crossing 42 lakes, 6 rivers, and over 20 miles of portaging. And like I said, he completed this in 91 hours. And you think about that, that's almost 3 miles an hour. But that's continuous. That's, you know, that's not counting for any time sleeping or any time eating or anything like that. In fact, during this entire period, Volhaber spent a total of 15 hours in camp. So during that extended expedition, he only either slept or stopped to eat for 15 hours. And in fact, the last half of it, he covered 134 miles, including 36 portages on 2 hours of sleep. So most, a good portion of this expedition, they were actually going in the dark. So, I mean, this doesn't really, to me, this didn't seem like the best way to experience the Boundary Waters. But, you know, for those people who just get revved up, you know, for sort of extreme physical challenges, certainly must be right up there.
Wow, and just to challenge each other, not for any reason
yes,
or anything.
Yes, okay. There was no fortune involved in this at all, no money for the winner, and the only fame was appearing on the front page of the Timberjay.
Well, that's good. And it wasn't us, so that's good.
That's right. We didn't have to suffer.
That's right.
We just got to read about it.
Marshall Helmberger, the Border News Roundup. You can read more at their website, timberjay.com, and also find them on Facebook.